Let me try to explain. There's always a causal link between how things develop, and we all know how this first 6 months of this year played out. It started off quite early in February when President Trump issued that executive order, and that shook things out very much so in South Africa by him referring specifically to the Afrikaner community by name. And then we all saw what happened after that. Mr. Rasool, who had to pack his bags and come home. And then we had some other delegations that went there, Solidarity and some others as well. And then we have the official visit by the president with his own team. We were then contacted from the United States by more than one group and more than one individual who said, but we believe that the Afrikaners' point of view should also be brought to the table, and we would like to ask Afrikaners themselves to come and do that. They invited the three of us. We didn't put our delegation together by ourselves. And I think it made sense because I'm looking from the political angle. Theo is doing the agricultural thing, and you know that that plays a huge part right from farm workers, right through expropriation, etc. And Gerard from the business side with regard to all the things that affect investments, that affect black economic empowerment and all that. So I think, with all due respect, looking back now, we were a very good team that could assist one another and played into different roles, and we were very well received. And there was a time when anything the ANC did was accepted internationally as the ANC because the heritage of Mr. Mandela. But things moved on, and slowly but surely South Africa has decided, and that's the ANC with all due respect, to position themselves in international relations to become the enemy of the West and to act in such a manner that they act as a threat to the U.S. national security. And that they did by becoming friends with all the rogue states out there. The connections with Iran, the connections with Hamas, all those connections created the problem. And slowly but surely, the focus came towards South Africa. And that was at the beginning of the year when President Trump basically took out a magnifying glass and said, well, let's have a look at what's happening in South Africa. It must be understood that we didn't go there to gossip. We didn't go there to tell tales, whatever, to the detriment of South Africa. No. We want our country to be a winning, successful country. But if you look at these things, and I used, for example, that investigation and the report that came from Professor William Kumede, where he says his investigation into black economic empowerment indicated that approximately, conservatively speaking, 1 trillion rand was divided over and over empowering less than 100 individuals in South Africa. And then we talk about economic broad-based black economic empowerment. That's not the case. Now, the irony is I had the opportunity in Parliament on the 27th of May to ask the specific question of President Ramaphosa, you remember, and he doubled down. He thought it was a good idea to give me an economic 101 lesson. That's interesting. But be that as it may, and since then, he has already doubled down again. He did so yesterday in his weekly letter, once again, that there's no way that they will move away from this, that, and the other. That's fine. That's their decision. But if the current policies, the current economic policies, can't get our economic growth above 1%. And we sit with an official figure of 32% unemployment. Unofficially, it's higher. It's 45 or more, even higher. Then surely somewhere you are doing something wrong.
We have been communicating with embassies for quite a while, for a number of years. We've also been involved in the court case up to the point where the Constitutional Court judges thought it good to close the doors of justice on us. And we are part of the group of organizations who are now planning to take this thing further for international adjudication. So when it was shown in the White House, we welcomed it because we have now depleted all our local remedies. And it was a big thing for me personally when we sat there in the White House last week, and these high-level officials, the director of state security was there, the director of homeland security was there, senior policy officer in the office of the vice president was there. When they said, we have heard you now, but now you must hear us. We have a few criteria by which we will measure the possibility of normalization of the relationship between South Africa and the United States. And the first one which came out was they want farm murders, farm attacks to be declared a priority crime on the same level as the poaching of rhinoceros. And they want a special investigation unit such as the Hawks to investigate it. But also, they want the ANC to publicly denounce this kill the farmer, kill the Boer. They said those are the first two conditions for the normalization of relations. Well, and it's music to the ears of any farmer, no matter how big or small, how rich or poor, black or white, new or well-established.
I express myself abundantly on the issue of the race laws. You know, there are 145 race laws currently in place. Some of them are not that, visible and doesn't get that much attention, but there are 145 laws that in some way or the other exclude whites to participate in the mainstream economy. I highlighted that. I dealt with the Employment Equity Act, where government, and I did it on each and every occasion, where government interferes with the right of a businessman to appoint people in the manner in which he like, based on merit. I explained what it means, how it is enforced, and I tell you, they couldn't believe their eyes or their ears. I mean, the fact that a government will go into such detail in telling a business how and what classes of people they must employ in terms of color and then also in gender, and then at the end to exclude from this thing a particular type of person, that is the white male, from this whole scheme, that is economic prosecution. I explained that. I also dealt with black economic empowerment that is destroying this economy and will to totally destroy the economy in time, because what they want to do, they want to take, and this is a blunt way of saying it, they want to take whites out of the economy. And this is what it all means. And they want to include other people, not on the basis of merit or on choice, but on the basis of color. Now, that cannot happen. And we will see that in terms of investment in South Africa. America is now set in one of their conditions is American companies need to be excluded from BEE. But although people are saying, but that only them. Well, that is a huge message. The Europeans and everybody else will jump on the bandwagon. They will say the thing. And we will say, well, if it's not good for them, then it's not good for us. It only illustrates that BE cannot happen, and it will not happen. There will be the resistance to BE will increase. The whole piece of legislation will eventually fall away because it will not work.
And we said from the beginning, we realized we don't represent all Afrikaners, but we didn't go there just to purely represent the Afrikaner. We represented South Africa. And we were a little bit arrogant. When we got there, we said to the Americans, you know, the problem at home is there's a vacuum of leadership in South Africa. And the three of us intend to step into that vacuum and give leadership on behalf of the country. And that was very well received in the United States, I can assure you. Because you must remember, not long before we went, there was this visit to the Oval Office by another delegation. And I said to the Americans, I was wondering what the viewership was of that specific meeting. We told the Americans, and you could assist us, we need to print a T-shirt, which will be very popular, and it should only say, dim the lights. I believe that will be quite popular if we try to do that. No, the difference is this, and that's an interesting thing, Alec. Some of the other delegations that went and came back were accused of being treasonous, of being disloyal to South Africa. We did not have any of that. Nothing, none whatsoever. Why? We did not go there to slander anyone. We did not go there to break down our country or to do anything negative. We went with a simple message. South Africa can and should be a model, fantastic country, and we should be a winning nation. That's what we want. However, there are some challenges that needs to be addressed. And then we started unpacking those kind of challenges. And we found a very accommodative audience, be that in the White House, in the Senate, at the State Department, at the House of Representatives, everywhere we went. And that was a constructive and a positive message. There was no negativity, and we came back. And unlike some of our friends and colleagues in other delegations, we are currently not being investigated for high treason. We must understand that you cannot take seriously any words that comes from the ANC. Let me give you an example. When President Ramaphosa is confronted in the Oval Office to say, but what about expropriation without compensation? What do you say about that? What was his response? No. We've got a constitution. There's a section 25 that protects property rights. Whoa. It was your party, Mr. President, who a year ago tried to amend section 25 to make expropriation possible. Don't try to tell President Trump now that you're against that. And then you go to Zimbabwe now and say other things again. So words are there to be used depending on the situation at the moment. But obviously, the United States take these things seriously and they know exactly what's going on.
We were asked by a group of business people in Washington to write a letter from a business angle to say, the policies in our country is restricting entrepreneurship in this way and this way. And they committed to have that letter on Trump's desk in the week or the few days before President Ramaphosa got there. So we sat until late that evening. If you want to write a letter, you should get one to write it. It's not that easy to write it. Amongst three, we actually had more people assisting. And it was from that letter that the invitation came. Now,
what did the letter say?
Well, we said, you have no idea how hard it is to do business here under these conditions. You have no idea of the risks involved in this policy environment. And we need policy changes. And it's hard to bring it about through the political process here because of the numbers and the kind of government we have now. A coalition government or a government of national unity is always a weaker government. And we can't wait until a next election. So we need assistance from elsewhere too. But we also said we want to bring a value proposition. If your problem is in the USA and in Europe that people are flocking onto your shores because they are running away from poverty and hunger, we come from a continent where we know poverty and hunger. And we know nothing stops a hungry man, no fence, and no border, no sea. But we can keep them there because we have 370 years of experience to fight poverty and hunger. There's only one way to win this battle, and that's by creating wealth. There's no other way. And that nothing can create more wealth in a shorter space of time and on a broader basis than agriculture can. If we could have access to commercial financing, because it's hard to find financing elsewhere in Africa. Remember, there's only four countries where you can own farmland south of the Sahara. And if you do not have a title deed, you do not have collateral for production loans. So help us to create the opportunities in Africa, and we can keep them there. Remember, food security does not mean that any country produces everything it consumes. No country does that today. Today, food security hinges on trade. Food security today means that a country must produce enough of that in which it has a competitive advantage so that it can exchange from the food basket those products in which it does not have a competitive advantage. So trade is extremely important to us. And we produce in South Africa into three markets. Europe and the USA only produce into two markets, the middle class and the upper market. We also have a very big informal market, or the poorer section of the market. But you need to be able to trade. And although our trade in agricultural products mostly wine and nuts and fruit. Although it's only 4% of our total exports in agriculture, it's the most important 4% because it is a very affluent market. And we plead it at every meeting that we should not punish farmers who are really supportive of US policies in general. So the farmers are holding their hearts for the impact of this trade or these tariffs. It knocks us out of the market, especially in macadamia nuts, almonds, and wine. And it's not that easy as the journalists make it of finding alternative markets.
Gerard, within the NIASA grouping, we were having a chat over dinner and you said that 40 businesses a month were closing. Are those people who lose their businesses through poor economics or whatever other reason? Are those people wanting to go over and take advantage of this refugee opportunity?
I think the invitation isn't that wide, and for a businessman, those that wants to go in any event. I don't think there's so many. I think it's more out of the groupings that Tu is referring to. It's a situation. I told Alec last night that just in the ASOS clientele, we're losing 30 to 40 companies a month that close their doors. There are many reasons for that. It's overall poor economic, bad industrial policy that's causing that. And that's a discussion on its own. But, I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. And it's not only hitting white people, it's hitting everybody. It's hitting people on the different levels of society in different manners. But it's tough.